Hey, it's Mark with the Good Mood Creators, creators of Mechazoo, the fast, vibrant 2.5D platformer. Buy it if you like cool games. And we are here at EGX with the Geek Show podcast.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Press X, where we ask all the important questions about games, like, why do all soap operas have bad guys and villains? That makes no sense. Only, you know, more game-related. And joining me, Rob, today is the other Rob and the two Andrews, or Andrew and Andy.
Yay. Hello.
So that's the introduction we're going with.
Yeah. Well, I didn't really have any ideas, so I just kind of went for it.
The show never has a good introduction.
I always do the introductions. Horrible man.
Is it just a thing where if your name is Rob, you can't do a proper introduction?
Hey, I can't do a proper introduction.
Well, you can do like sort of a very businessy one. Or you can try and do the jokes. I try and do the jokes, and usually it fails, so...
Yeah, but you did. You were spot on there. You did say try, not execute the jokes.
Oh, the curse of Rob is starting to affect him. The curse of Rob is starting to affect him.
You are fierce today, Andy. Absolutely fierce. Like that young lad in the Barbie advert.
Oh my God, I completely forgot about him. He is my favourite fictional character.
If this is sounding like something you never heard of before, just search Barbie advert and little boy or something.
Oh, it's so fierce.
That might actually come up with some bad search terms. Okay, don't do that. Just search a Barbie and it's so fierce.
Yes.
And you'll probably find him. It was part of, I think it was the Barbie company, whatever they call themselves, American attempt to appeal to boys as well as girls. And it's just the most camp thing in existence. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I feel sorry for the kid.
Because he's like 8 years old wearing kind of a tiny version of a Guy Fieri shirt. Just twirling around and yelling, it's so fierce.
Yeah, and I don't know what they did to his hair, but that's some weird attempt at a pompadour they had going on.
I think that just happens when you put the shirt on.
It does exist. It's not some sort of collective cheese dream that we're all suffering from. It does exist.
No.
Damn.
Anyway, we are Press X and we do video games. We have lots of games to get through today, so I'm going to kick us off with our first trip to Japan of the day, with Operation Babel, New Tokyo Legacy, which is...
That's a fantastically terrible title.
Well, it's a typically Japanese title, I think you'll find, and it's out on the PC, PS Vita, and PlayStation 3. It's published by NIS America, and it is one of the sequels to Operation Babel, which came out a while ago, and is... The Developer Experience Incorporated, they are synonymous with first-person RPG dungeon crawlers.
Here's the question, though, because I've never played a Japanese first-person game. Do they have legs?
Well, I was about to explain what it is.
No. You know when you play like a first-person game and you pull the camera down, can you see the legs, or is it just like a floating camera?
That's what I was about to explain.
Oh, okay.
Jump in the shark there, Rob.
No, it's what everybody does whenever they play a first-person perspective game.
Yeah, there's first-person and then there's first-person. There's two different types of first-person. There's a static camera first-person, which is what these are, and then you've got the movable camera, which is what most Western RPG first-person type games would be, so you can move the camera around. These ones, yeah. You can't. Okay, so Experience Incorporated, and they are synonymous with these sorts of games, where you have this first-person dungeon crawler in the form of, say, the old Eye of the Beholder games on the Commodore Amiga from years ago. Experience have done games like Demon Gaze and Stranger of Sword City and various others. Operation Abyss New Tokyo Legacy is an improved sequel to Operation Babel, but it's still the same sort of game. And I don't know why I'm back to dungeon crawling through first-person perspective dungeons and fighting monsters in these dungeons with a group of characters. Don't know why I'm back to that, but unfortunately, I am. There's a certain See, these games are supposed to function on the basis of the story being the driving factor. And the story for New Tokyo Legacy, it follows directly on from the original game. A massive object called the Embryo has appeared in the sky of Tokyo, and you play as a member of the Xth Squad, or 10th Squad. Or I think it's supposed to be 10th Squad, but with it being a Japanese game, they put XTH. So I'm assuming it's 10th Squad, but it could also be Xth Squad, because it is a Japanese game.
Are you calling Japanese people stupid, Rob?
No, I'm saying that things get lost in translation.
He's calling
it
Japanese.
Kind of reminds me of Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
We just had that one random issue where someone's like, no Wolverine, you absolute dumbass. It's weapon 10.
Yeah.
Gah.
Exactly.
You numpty.
Which means the X-Men are no longer the X-Men. They are the 10 men.
That sounds different.
Exactly. Totally different.
Wait. So does that mean there's an X-Men team that is now the 10 Treme 10 men?
Yes. And we now have 10 men blue and 10 men gold.
10 men?
Yes.
Isn't that what you're supposed to, you're supposed to wear if you have, a hyperactive bladder or something?
No, those are incontinent pants.
Are you saying Wolverine's incontinent?
He is pretty old.
Yeah, you know.
The way you said 10 men gold, it sounds like either something like that or, a best hits album.
Yeah, we're not talking about the male version of Tenor.
Actually, can we get back to the...
No, we can't. Because I'm confused. Out, all those outside underpants are actually just adult diapers.
Yes, they are. Anyway, back to Operation Babel.
Yeah, back to your game.
Back to Operation Babel, New Tokyo Legacy. Basically, the embryo in the sky of Tokyo causes monsters called variants to appear in labyrinths across the city. And your squad has to get to the bottom of the crisis, they have to explore the labyrinths, fight the monsters, blah, blah, blah. And it is basically a hardcore first-person perspective dungeon crawler. You have a team of six, you go into you dive through the labyrinth, explore the maze, fight the monsters, fight the boss, figure out what's going on, keep going, until you reach the end of the story. And it's got some changes to the original game, one of them being the inclusion of subclass for your characters or for your team. So you can use skills from a second class as well, but that means you level up slower because the experience is spread out. But aside from that change, there's not really much that's different here. There's cosmetic changes because the story is supposed to have progressed onwards, but essentially it's exactly the same game as Operation Babel. Only with newer characters and with an updated scenario, with slightly different maps to explore, slightly different mazes rather than maps, I should say. Locations are pretty much identical to, mostly the same, I should say, as in the first game. There's a few extra locations thrown in for good measure. There's the Blood Code system, which is the subclass system. The labyrinths are called abysses, so you explore the abyss and blah, 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 which is where it gets, it's where part of the name comes from, the whole, the name for the first game came from. It's a weird game. It is a very, very weird game. And it's so typically Japanese, it's actually kind of annoying, I should say. And also kind of dull, because these dungeon crawlers, they don't really hold the attention that well. After you've basically gone crawling through a certain number of first-person perspective dungeons, fighting monsters over and over again, and then going through all the talking head scenes, where it's just you reading through all the text that's being said. Remember when you were playing Danganronpa, Rob?
I was just thinking about how much of a weird term dungeon crawler is. It kind of sounds like a sex act.
Yeah, I know. But remember when you were playing Danganronpa?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Right, and you spent loads of time just reading through dialogue.
You say reading. What I actually was doing was pressing X as fast as my feet. It was like I was playing track and field.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was doing. That's kind of what I was doing with Operation Babel, is just pressing X really quick just to go through the dialogue. There were certain bits where you had to choose a particular option, And I started panicking at that point because I thought, hang on, I can't remember what's been said. Can I backtrack? No, I can't. So I just have to choose one of these options and hope for the best. So I was slightly winging it, but that's how dull the game became, because there's just these long periods where there's just nothing but dialogue, and it really breaks the flow of the game. And that's the big problem with these sorts of games, is that, you know, when you're going out adventuring, you know, going exploring abysses, diving into labyrinths, exploring dungeons, whatever, you want to keep doing that. You want to get to that real quick. You want to keep doing that so you level up quicker, so you can fight better, bigger monsters, you know, and just leave the story to one side. But this game doesn't allow you to do that.
Isn't this just a remake of Pac-Man with anime hair?
Basically, yes.
But I've made it sound interesting.
But it's not.
Could you imagine Pac-Man with anime hair? That'd be wonderful.
It literally is, though, first-person perspective Pac-Man with anime hair. I hate to say it like that, but it is just as dull as that would be.
Oh, but Pac-Man with anime hair would be amazing. Could you imagine it?
Yes, and I find
he literally got Super Saiyan when he eats his pills.
Yes, he would.
Oh, please, that's like boring.
Except also there's like a week long bit of just him powering up.
Could be anything you want it to be.
Do you know the real big problem with Operation Babel? Because there are first-person perspective dungeon crawlers, right, that are actually really good. Things like the Etrian Odyssey games. And the reason why there's the big difference is because with games like Operation Babel, there is that huge gap between going out and fighting monsters and just reading dialogue. Whereas in Etrian Odyssey, you had the option to go fight monsters instead of continuing with the story. In this, it just feels like you have to keep going with the story in order to progress, because the dungeons are so dull. You know, just everything inside the dungeons are just so dull.
Yeah, I think you've said dull enough to sort of conclusively put a label on what that game is.
It's sad, but because there are some good dungeon crawlers out there.
There's a lot of stuff which NIS America put out which don't really have any sort of appeal beyond it's like something else which is popular. But popular in the sort of world where NIS America, NIS is popular, is very marginal stuff.
Well, my problem with this is Experience and NIS America have made some, you know, the companies that have made this have actually made some good first-person perspective dungeon crawlers. Stranger of Sword City is a really good game. I enjoy it. Dungeon Travelers is a good game. I enjoy it.
See, the thing with this sort of stuff is, I'm not sure if you're making it up or not. The
thing is, it's not that they don't know how to make these games actually entertaining.
You know? Not just too many of them.
My favourite is Magical Sword of the Southwest 17.
Don't, Andrew, because that probably exists now that you've said it, and if it doesn't, someone's working on it.
Oh, God, is it like Rule 63?
Rule 34, you mean?
Probably.
Yeah.
Order 66, kill all the Jedi.
So, yeah, it probably is like that. Now that you've said it, someone's going to make a game of it.
Maybe that can be Rule 63. Fix the internet.
Yeah. So anyway, that's Operation Babel, New Tokyo Legacy. It's definitely one for fans of the original game. Unfortunately, I'm not a fan of the original game.
Play it with pounding 90s techno. You know, it works for Pac-Man. It can work for Town of Babel.
Town of Babel?
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Are you getting confused with your game?
Yeah, I guess.
The game that you can't remember the name of.
Well, that surely should be a hint.
Well, that must be some complicated name, that, Rob, to keep you forgetting it.
Yeah, it's such a complicated name. It's so long. It's
Village of Illumination, isn't it?
It's
Hamlet of Light Bulbs.
You're making it sound like an advert for a car now, where they'll drive through it and there's nobody in that town for some reason. I don't know where all the people live. Is it been an apocalypse in this town where they're advertising the car? I don't follow.
I don't know. City of Luminescence.
Anyway, no. Town of Light is what it's called. And I played it last year at EGX, and there was a lot of stuff like it, to be honest, then.
But the fact the fact that you played it makes it funnier that you keep forgetting the name.
Yeah, just the logo, it was familiar. I was like, I know that from somewhere. And I played it again, you know, for the purpose of me talking here like I am. And it just came all, it all came back to me. It all came back. But what it is basically, it's one of the types of games that came from the mighty inspiration of the original Outlast and games like it, sort of, and Gone Home as well to an extent. Sort of quiet, contemplative, walking games, which are spooky, some more than others. I don't, that was one of my big problems of Gone Home, actually, because it set up this really spooky atmosphere. All it was about fundamentally was a teenage girl coming to terms with her sexuality, which is like some almighty red herring.
Okay.
You know, because it drops all this stuff about sort of being a murderer who lives in the walls of the house. And then it's like, that was nothing. Like, whatsoever. There's nothing about that. But this one, I have a hard time calling it a horror because as the game starts, it sets up this idea that it's all about mental episodes that have actually happened to people in the past. It's about mental illness. But it's presented itself in a way where it does, like, the horror tricks. Sort of the abandoned asylum, the spooky abandoned area, the quietness, the, you know, picking up, like, spooky things in a spooky place. Like, you have to find your teddy bear, which you just find, like, a single solitary teddy bear in an abandoned, asylum. That's just spooky. But I think, fundamentally, it's like I said, you know, with AGX, there's a lot of things like this. I think it's just one of these, you get like every now and again, there's about two or three indie trends which are happening a lot of. You get stuff like the Infinite Bullet Hell Shooter. You get stuff like Roguelite or stuff like that. You get your trends, don't you?
Yeah.
And the sort of the walking simulator, sort of moody horror walking simulator, is just one of them. And unfortunately, this is just another one of those types of games. I don't think they're ever particularly scary or spooky.
Would say it's more like an experience than a game.
Well, yeah, that's what they're pushing it for. But just walking around and it's just moody and spooky. I don't know, it's just if that
it's
was
like
reality,
house ride, isn't it?
Yeah, in theory, if it was walking house ride and I was walking around it, it would be legitimately spooky. But as you're walking around it as a character who, I think I've been spoiled by sort of first person perspective games because when like first person perspective games of a certain caliber. You move the character, they sort of bob the head, and there's some sort of indication that there's a character there. And I know this is indie, and that's an awful lot to put on it, and there's an expectation, but it's just a static camera walking around this area, and you can put your torch on, and that's about it, really. And you pick stuff up, and you flick switches, and you pick up pages. I think that's the best part of the game, because it's sort of constructing a diary, sort of. The whole idea of it is sort of recollecting your memories of what happened years ago, which is fine. And the images that come in these pages that you find are just wonderful, sort of scratchy hand-drawn art, which are really interesting. But again
it all comes... just slender, isn't it?
Yeah. At the end of the day, all it comes down to is you've seen this hundreds of times before. So what does it do that's unique or different? I mean, the mental health thing is something which is interesting, but I don't think it's the right sort of game for this sort of for those sorts of stories, you know. But it's done in the Unity engine, so it looks nice. At least there's a nice sense of space, and you know, they do some good like design with it as how they put the world together. But it was just kind of forgettable. I'll be honest. Yeah, I mean, the one thing of it is it's been put out by Wired, the very well known and well regarded tech news outlet. So they're going into publishing. And as far as sort of putting your first foot out there into this world, I don't think they've done very well, frankly. I hate being so negative about something, but yeah, it's just another one of these types of games. I felt the same at EGX, to be honest. And that was like when I played it on the PC. And here I played it on the PS4. There's no real immediate difference. I think it works better as a PC game because with a PC game, it's you're more intimate with the screen that you're playing it with. You're more up close and personal with it. Whereas with the console, you're sat a bit further back and it's not quite as immediate with like your experience.
We do have to say, to anybody listening, we do talk positively about games on this show.
Shut up, Andy. No, we don't. All games are rubbish.
And this game, this Town of Light, do you play it face down in defense mode? Because it sounds like a Yu-Gi-Oh card.
Hey. That's, whoa, there's only one person who gets to say play it face down in defense mode, and that's me. That's like the one joke I get to make about Yu-Gi-Oh.
Well, it sounds like a magic card, but that didn't sound funny.
No, because then you'd have to just tap the Town of Light.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so it exists, Town of Light. It's one of these games where it's a fine example of you setting up your studio, so this is just sort of an example of what they can do.
Okay, yeah, cool.
That kind of sounds like they wanted to play it safe then, since it was like their first one.
Yeah, there were some other games at AGX that were like this, but were just marvellous, and this was the game which I was measuring them all against, basically.
Okay.
Is it better than this? Then, yeah, it's good. If it's not this, it's just the crowd, unfortunately. And I feel awfully negative about this, but, you know, I can't fabricate something good about it when it's just okay.
Yeah.
At everything.
Yeah, we get it.
Okay, moving on from negative central into something a bit more positive.
No.
No, because it's my turn.
No.
And I feel like I've already set the tone, but I have been playing Dreamfall Chapters, which is a sequel to Dreamfall The Longest Journey, and is a game that was released in 2014 for PC.
Yep.
And is now being ported for PS4. So it is an episodic point and click adventure game, and it's got a plot. And this is the bit where I get to tell you all what that plot is. So, everyone, get your seatbelts on. So there are two worlds, right? And one of them is called Stark, and it's a futuristic cyberpunky reality where a woman named Zoe Castillo has been investigating brain devices that make you have lucid dreams. But then the bad people got her and she went in a coma. And now she's in an in-between world called the dream space, where dreams happen and they're real, maybe, sort of. Then also, we have another world called Arcadia, which is like a old-timey fantasy world, where a man named Kian something or the other, I don't care, it's a stupid made-up fantasy name, has been arrested for treason. But then he gets broken out of prison and involved in all this Game of Thronesy political chicanery. But also the two worlds are connected, but were sealed apart many millennia ago. And now things threaten to upset the balance between the two worlds. And the heroes have to do stuff to stop that through magic dream logic.
On paper, it sounds all right.
So hang on. The two worlds were connected before, and now they're separated and sealed away from each other, and so...
Yeah, and the idea is the barrier's like this metaphysical dream thing.
So...
And there are sides working on, like, both worlds to try and weaken that barrier will cause things to collapse and stuff.
But it won't mean the end of the world, though, will it? Because the two worlds were connected before.
Yes, it will. That's kind of... Bad things will happen, Rob.
But the two worlds were connected before.
That makes no sense.
They were separated for reasons, and if they joined together again, that would be bad.
Is it like,
this just sounds like two gaming ideas that they just decided they're just shot together.
No, is it like twins where where one of them is decidedly evil, and so they have to separate them because if they ever meet again, the evil one will turn the good one evil, and then you'll have two evil twins.
I don't know. I got a bit confused while playing it.
I'm confused with you explaining it.
Well, it's hard because you gave me a game that's like a sequel to a thing I've never played before, and it's all, we're in the magic dream space, and here's the future and also the past.
Thing is, I've played The Longest Journey, and I'm still confused by what you're saying.
How do you think I feel?
Even worse.
Games can sometimes be good, people listening to this.
No, like, to be fair, I think overall it is a fairly solid story, like, especially later on, when it's like, it's this big whole narrative for like, opposite, because that's the whole point of like the two worlds are like the opposite of each other and how that's all connected, and like this big overarching story between the two, and also a bunch of stuff about how like it's all a metaphor for the stages of life and stuff. Getting there is a pain in the ass. It's like you start the story and you're playing as a woman and she's in a coma and she's in a magic dream realm, but enough of that. Now it's suddenly fantasy world where a man's escaping from prison, now we're back to the woman, but it's not the same woman because now she's in the future. And surprised that was only a clone and the real woman is still in the dreamland. But now she's not. Now she's in the future too. Except now she's in the dream and now she's in the past and now she's back in the future. And now there's a third character who lives in between all the things.
It's like a comic book written by somebody who has no idea what a comic book is.
It sounds more like Star Wars.
See, I'm still confused by the thought of in somebody in a magical dream well, is what you said before realm there, Andrew.
I said realm, but also there is actually like a well of dreams.
That joke gone, isn't it?
Because that's where she meets like the Keeper of Dreams, whose real name I've forgotten, but basically looks exactly like Dalism, only is voiced by someone who sounds almost exactly like Ben Kingsley.
So is he like the Keeper of the Well of Dreams? Does he live in the Well of Dreams? Or is he outside with a bucket?
11. That's the only answer that makes sense. Do not play this game if you haven't played the first.
Okay.
It is not friendly for newcomers. Especially because its way of like telling you things is basically stand there for like 10 minutes while a character just narrates exposition at you. And also, that was only half the exposition. Now go into like the menu and select the diary options to read like an entire novel's worth of further exposition so that you can fully understand what's going on.
And all this exposition is stuff that happened in the previous game.
Pretty much.
Oh, God.
It's like props to them for making two worlds that are very fleshed out.
Yeah.
But God, I wish they could have like made a more natural and flowing way of introducing you to that.
Oh, so on a positive note, if you like revising, this is the game for you.
If you like standing there and listening while characters tell you their entire life story, boy, are you in for a treat. Except, no, you're not in for a treat. Because gameplay-wise, you know in Evolution how you get these kind of weird missing links?
Yeah.
This is basically like the weird missing link between 90s point-and-click adventures and like Telltale games. Because it's basically like the Telltale style of episodic, kind of character-driven, full of moral choices type stories, only with awful 90s point-and-click mechanics. So literally everything is just, find a thing, use it with another thing. No, not the thing that would make sense. Combine it with this item that is completely like unintuitive, then do other... Look at the one bit you've got to pick a lock. So do you know how you pick the lock?
A ribbon and a brick.
No, that would make too much sense. You get a broom, right?
Yeah.
And you slap the end off the broom. Then you combine the broken broom with a pillow, right? Then you use that on a window. Oh, but also the window is above the character's head. So if you haven't been looking up, enjoy walking around in circles for like 15 minutes trying to find out what you're supposed to do. So you shove that out the window. Also, by the way, this is in the fantasy world, not the cyberpunk future world.
Okay.
Shove that out the window, and it gets shot with arrows. And you pull it back in, take one of the arrows out, and then obviously you use the arrow to pick the lock.
Why would you use an arrow to pick the lock? Unless it's actually Arrow from the TV series.
Yes, you take Oliver Queen and just repeatedly smash his head into the lock.
Yes. And I'd like to see the ball that fired him at you.
And also, this is going to sound almost like a niggle, but it's the kind of thing that you can't understand how horribly frustrating it is until you've played the game. The cursor is goddamn tiny.
Oh, yeah.
It's this tiny white dot. And a lot of the game is in very bright white backgrounds. And it's a tiny white dot that when it's over the right thing brings up like a tiny bit of white text to tell you that you can interact with it.
Yeah, I've played loads of games like that.
Like, I feel like it was probably fine on PC, but when you're sitting on the other side of a room with a controller in your hand, it turns everything into a guess.
Hmm.
Good game then.
Oh yeah, great. And the graphics, let me tell you. Because they've done that awkward thing where they've kind of like aimed for realistic and fallen just a bit too short so that it's all like really horribly uncanny valley.
Oh.
And it takes the emotion out of any scene when it like cuts to a character and you just have to stare into their cold dead eyes, which essentially look like they've been painted onto a plastic model.
So they all look like Fox News presenters?
Yes, basically.
Oh, Oh.
And like, it does lead to like some of my favorite moments, which is where it's painfully obvious where the game is taking like graphical shortcuts. Like you see a character who just says, "I'm going to open this door now," and then like they're just standing next to the door, unmoving as the door swings open.
Please say that character's name is Bill O'Reilly. Sorry?
Yeah, that's exactly what Bill O'Reilly does.
Yeah.
I also hope that Bill O'Reilly runs like the NPCs. Because literally, there's like some of them where the upper half of their body is completely motionless. And you just like see the legs just like going up, down, up, down. It's incredible. The one thing I actually love about the game.
I really want to see Bill O'Reilly running to see if he runs like that now.
Should we end that one on a really high note there?
Yeah, I found something I like about the game.
Best running in games.
Yeah.
Somebody needs that award.
Yes, I agree. It's weird because I can follow directly on from Andrew in terms of a game where it's probably a good idea to have either played or watched what came before to fully appreciate the game.
Key question here is, are we going even further down this line of rubbish?
Oh, that's right. They can't be reunited because of the undreaming, which is like the anti-dream world, which will tear everything apart if the barrier is broken.
Oh, right. Okay.
See, it all makes sense, really.
Wow.
Was it in taking on LSD when they did this and wrote it?
Maybe. On the plus side, though, I feel like I can play Kingdom Hearts now and understand what it's about.
Have you been enlightened? Is this like, is playing this like your version of sitting on a mountain in an orange robe?
Yes, that's it. There's now no video game plot that is too complex for me to understand.
He's been sat under a waterfall, yes, just meditating.
Except the waterfall is all like copies of E.T. the video game.
Right. Anyway, moving on to me then. I have Utaware Romano, Mask of Deception on the PS4, but it's also out on the PS Vita. It came out originally in Japan in 2015, in September 2015, and it's just been released in the UK. And for those people who aren't aware of the name, just a little bit of history before we get into this. Utaware Romano was originally a visual novel RPG tactical game, you know, a tactical RPG type thing, an adult one by Leaf, which came out in the early noughties, I think 2002. And it had an anime adaptation, which came out around 2006. And I've seen the anime adaptation, which isn't this story. This Mask of Deception is effectively a sequel to the original Utaware Romano game and anime series, with a lot of the adult nature carefully removed to make it more accessible to people. And
when you say adult, is it like doing your taxes or something?
No, it's not like audit. It's basically adult as in relations adult. So
I spy with my little eye, I spy your nipple.
Basically, yeah. But we're talking
Bob,
like...
No, we can't let the children know that nipples exist.
We're talking early noughties nipple, and in terms of...
Nipples are lies. Nipples are propaganda.
We're talking early noughties nipple, and at that point, they were kind of hilarious. Think bat nipples.
Well, do you remember that game on PlayStation 2, was it? Fahrenheit, where there was that incredible sex scene?
Yeah.
Which was just...
So, yeah.
It was like somebody was just rubbing two blocks of like butter against each other.
Douglas, what are you doing? Sorry, I can never watch the Lopak advert with the guy with the trombone again.
He just scribbled nipples on like the big block of butter and he just rubbed them against each other.
So remember that scene had like the most early noughties music imaginable.
Do you know what's what that just reminds me of there?
What?
Do you know those like the Naked Gun films where,
yes,
it just goes to like an object or, yeah, something?
Yeah.
That in the middle of Fahrenheit would have been hilarious.
And it just cuts to an aubergine.
Yeah. Anyway. Otowaru Romano, Mask of Deception is, it's developed by Aqua Plus and published by Atlas. And it's, effectively, it starts off in the same way as the original Otowaru Romano started off. You have a unknown protagonist who wakes up in the wilderness. He is being taken care of by somebody who has found him. He has no idea of who he is or how he's got there, and he's confused by everything that's going on. In the first game and in the anime series, the protagonist took on the was given the name of Hakuro, and he was found by two sisters called Eruru and Aruru and their grandmother. He was badly injured, and he Eruru and Aruru.
How many times did it take you to say that?
It's easy. I've seen the anime, so it's pretty simple. Anyway, Hakuro, his name literally means White Emperor in the Ainu language, and Ainu is kind of a tribal culture that was in Japan. And a lot of the costume in these games is taken from like the Ainu culture and from medieval Japanese clothing as well. So anyway, he was the main character of the first game, and the character in Mask of Deception is picked up by a girl called Kuon, and she was raised by Eruru, who was one of the wives of Hakuro in the first game, in the first anime series, and she is basically going around as kind of a traveling trader, explorer type thing, and she finds this amnesiac guy wearing a surgery gown, a hospital gown, and just lying in this frozen landscape, slowly freezing to death, and no idea how he's got there. There's nobody else around. He's just unconscious and freezing. So she takes care of him, and she quickly finds there's something not quite right with the entire situation. But she calls him Haku, and it's at that point that you start progressing in the game a little bit. And this is effectively a visual novel. This is effectively just a visual novel, but it's continuing on from the first game, and what it's doing is building on the first game and the first anime series and creating this kind of epic fantasy scenario, which it actually does really well, in terms of, especially with it being a visual novel. I was a lot more invested and interested in finding out what happens next in this game, because it was actually telling the story a lot better than I've seen in other visual novels. It wasn't just presenting things, in order to appeal to a certain subset of fans. And there are moments like that which I still call, otaku bait. There are those moments in there, but there are some genuinely funny moments. There are some genuinely dramatic moments, and there are one or two genuinely emotional moments. A lot of this is just basically storytelling. There are some combat bits where it then switches to a combat phase, a combat scenario where you have like a tactical grid. You can move the characters around, fight the monsters, and choose from turn-based attacks or turn-based defense or whatever it is. And the graphics at that point are actually pretty good. But for the most part, what you're seeing is this... are these anime-style characters, this really nice scenery in general. And overall, it's actually quite a good package. I don't know if it's worth the price,
You're not allowed to say that.
Why?
Quite a good package. I got tortured in the past for using that as an idiom for describing something good.
No, you said it was a tight package. There's
a good package. Isn't exactly much better. I think we just veto the word package. It's too loaded.
Okay.
There's too much meaning in it.
It's quite a good banana hammock.
I mean, I know my package is very heavily loaded.
Yeah.
Oh,
right. It's quite a good banana hammock.
That's better.
Right, I don't know if it's worth the price.
Can we just use that rate of rating for all of our games that we do?
What? The weight of the...
I would have made them nipples out of 10.
Okay. No, jeans.
Yeah. Like,
is that good?
No. I mean, the nipples are the sister. It's like, you have 10 nipples.
Yeah.
That's how many of the nipples do you want to give to this game?
Yes.
I was like, nipples is 2 out of 10. I don't know. Bananas, 1 out of 10. Grapes is 10 out of 10. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll finish this off. Ottawa Romano, Mask of Deception. It doesn't really break any new ground when it comes to kind of visual novels or the combat element of the game. Okay, but it's one of those games where it does what it does rather well, and it makes things actually quite enjoyable. It's basically it's not trying to be everything to everybody. It's basically just the developers have gone, okay, it's a visual novel. We're telling a story. So let's focus on telling a story. You know, that's what people want from this. They don't want like loads of different combat mechanics, loads of different options. They want you to present the story, and you know, just continue telling a good story, a good fantasy story, and that's effectively what it is. Ottawa Romano is, I think it was one of the titles from the early noughties that reinvigorated the fascination with animal ears, and there are lots of animal characters in this game, or animal anthropomorphized animal based characters. Actually, no, that's incorrect. There's cat girls and dog girls and cat men and cat boys and dog boys and cat men and dog men and cat women and dog women and all sorts of other animal men and women and stuff like that in this game. In fact, you as the protagonist are actually the oddity because you don't have animal ears and a tail. You are human. And as the story progresses, you find out more and more about what actually happened to you. The fact that you were, what's the word I'm looking for? You were basically frozen for X number of years. And it's all to do with this mythos about a god who represented the evolutionary link and the a bunch of rogue scientists in the past who wanted to find the key to immortality and then screwed everything up and the entire world. And accidentally created this race of humanoid animal people, and humanity has basically disappeared.
I'm confused.
You're going to be confused. It's like I said, this is one of those games where if you've watched the original anime series or played the original game, then it will make a hell of a lot more sense as to what is actually going on. It does make the effort to try and fill in the blanks, but it's actually better just to go and watch the original anime series before you play the game. But it's not absolutely necessary.
It's not exactly appealing to anybody else but fans, though, really, is it?
Well, no, because you can, as a new player, you can actually dive into this and you'll get most of the story. Maybe you won't understand some of the references.
That's not what I mean.
Thing is, maybe you won't understand some of the references, but you will actually understand a lot of what's going on by the end of the game.
No, but I don't mean like that. I mean, you're like a game shop. Those things do still exist. I've seen them.
Yeah, if you walk in, you'll just look at it and go, oh, maybe you might think that looks interesting or that sounds interesting. I'll give it a try. It's just one of those games. You don't need to have played to know. You don't need prior knowledge of the previous titles to actually.
I'm just saying that the only people who will have any interest in it are people who are aware of it.
No.
It's not exactly.
No, I think you're incorrect on that. This isn't like Operation Babel.
No, I was just talking about anime titles in general.
Anime titles, again, I think you're being very narrow in your vision on that one. There are a lot of titles where people just look at them and go, actually, that looks quite interesting, and they'll pick it up.
Okay. Andy?
Yes?
Would you play an anime game?
You have, haven't you, Andy?
No.
You have?
There's my evidence.
Andy has played an anime-based game.
Unless you count Yu-Gi-Oh!
See?
But, yes!
See?
But, that's a card game, though.
No, it's an anime.
Okay,
yeah, but it was a card game. It was a card game first, though.
Yeah, he's got you there.
Actually, it was an anime.
Even so, since then, have you played one since then?
No.
You have, Andy.
There we go.
You have, because I'm pretty sure we've got audio of you reviewing them.
It's like we're fighting for Andy's soul, isn't it?
Yeah. The question is, Andy, if it was not a property that you knew and it was not something you were doing for this show, would you play an anime game?
Not really.
There we go.
Okay.
And that's what most people are like.
I know it's something Rob will probably send me for one of their future games, though.
That's generally my point. Most people look at an anime game and go, it exists, and look for what we're interested in. That's...
Yeah, I'm not saying it's going to have huge appeal. Never said that.
No, that's what I mean. So people who will buy it are people who will be at least aware of it, that's all.
No, because then you're narrowing it down to people who are aware of Utaware Rumano. I'm saying...
I don't mean it in that specific terms.
Yeah, but that's literally what you said. What I'm saying is this will appeal to people who are just, in general, aware of anime, which is a much bigger crowd.
That's basically what I was saying. Just I was wording it badly.
Yes.
You probably said that, but it just becomes white noise when you talk about anime stuff.
This game that has a picture of cat ear girls on the front will appeal to people who like things with girls with cat ears.
I went to my happy place when you were talking there. It was a swing and my go-kart and, you know, I had candy corn and floss and stuff.
Long story short, Utaware Rumano, Mask of Deception will appeal to anybody who is familiar with anime or manga, full stop, okay? It'll appeal to people who like their fantasy as well and just want to try something different. It doesn't matter whether you've played an anime game or not. If you want to give a visual novel a try, this is probably a good one to start off with.
All right, something which is a bit broader in its appeal. Let's finish on something broad. Have we got that?
As broad as a machete.
Or any of the other weapons he used in that scene.
He's referring to Friday the 13th, and I'm pretty sure in one of the Friday the 13th, he picked up like a climbing frame and threw it at somebody. I'm pretty sure that happens.
Probably.
In one of the sequels.
I'd love to know where the climbing frame was in this teenager camp.
But, I think it was outside a hospital, like near a school or whatever. There seems to be the only two places that this stuff happens in.
Well, I've been playing the new Friday the 13th game. Came out on the 26th, and it is an open world or semi-open world. I don't know what semi-open world means because it's open world. It's an open world game, and basically, it's a 100% online game for now. One of the players is Jason, and seven of the players are counselors. And the game, basically, if you're Jason, you have to kill all the counselors.
Is it counselors?
Hang on.
Counselors.
Are we talking counselors as in the therapy or counselors as in local counselors who work for the
You're getting pedantic there, Rob.
But then camp counselors. That's a DLC, Rob.
Doesn't it usually just kill the campers and stuff like that?
That's the counselors?
No, campers. Campers are like the teenagers, the counselors are the people that run the camp.
Sorry, I've got this weird crossover.
No, the counselors like in the first Friday the 13th, they're all counselors, which I know.
Yeah.
Yes, wasn't Jason? It was Jason's mum. Shut up, one guy in the audience.
or was it part six where it wasn't either of them? But we don't talk about that film.
See, I'm getting really confused now with the whole campers thing. I'm just
starting. He just kills everybody.
No, I'm. Yes. My brain just suddenly went to to the horror version of Heidi High.
It's not like Jason goes, oh, he's a dentist, not touching him. You know,
is he going after all the red shirts at Butlins?
Yeah.
But anyway, from the start of the game, there's three or four maps. Each map is a different camp from four of the different films. And basically, it's a very free-for-all game because campers can kill each other, which is annoying. Jason must be about between 12 and 16 different type of kills that you have to unlock as you gain levels. So it's very fascinating. The right hook from Jason Takes Manhattan is on there, if anybody's seen that one.
And Jason Takes Manhattan?
Yeah.
Is that an actual film?
Yeah.
Where he right hooks the, wouldn't be a counselor on that one because that starts on a boat, but the student or whatever it is. And then his head flies off and it goes into a bin.
Okay. Because the only movie I knew that had the title Takes Manhattan was Muppets. So I was getting confused.
The one called Hercules Takes Manhattan, which is basically like Arnold Schwarzenegger's first ever film?
No, it's Hercules in New York.
Yeah, that's bad. Don't watch that.
I think everybody's stuck Manhattan. But anyway, they're developing this game as well. They're bringing the single-player mode out in the summer, so that should be soon. But they're also planning... they're going to continue working on it. For example, Pamela Voorhees' mum? She could be a character instead of Jason.
There's a question here, though.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you've played both Jason and the Avatar Upside.
Yes.
Can you actually survive as the counselor or whatever it is?
Yes. You've got different ways you can escape. For example, by boat, by car, you can call the police, and you can kill Jason. But
no, you can't. He's immortal.
But there's one very complicated way to kill Jason, and that's the only way you can kill Jason. And that includes one player dying and coming back as Tommy Jarvis, which is a major character from three other films. But the full game basically is you can escape, you can kill him, or you can like basically get killed by him.
Yeah. I've seen some bits where he seems like incredibly powerful, where if you make a noise, like knock something over, like a radio or something, he'll just appear.
Jason has four abilities. I think it's four abilities, but he has a number of abilities. He has where he can see a light or a silhouette of the counselor, or the house will glow red.
He's got Batman vision.
In there. Yeah, Batman vision. But if, for example, it wears off, it's only about 5 seconds and then has to recharge again. So it's not like a game breaker. But he can teleport to different areas of the map. He can basically go invisible and go fast for about 3 or 4 seconds.
You say he can go fast?
Hang on, are you saying Jason is like a superhero villain type character?
Well, he wasn't exactly human after he got electrocuted and drowned in, I think it was the fifth one.
Yeah, but he wasn't a full
But the thing is, he's kind of like evil incarnate, isn't he? He just defies logic.
But you do unlock these perks for the counselors that can, for example, as you go up levels, you get CR points, and you get a random skill, and it could be, for example, potential to evade Jason's vision, so you won't show up in red for like a certain amount of time. So it's a very strategic game. You get up to, I think it's 8 or 9 Jasons from each of the different films that are randomly chosen.
Jason X.
That might be a DLC. It's not in there. Aww. But you've got basically every single Jason apart from Jason X, but you've also got the create a new Jason, which pre-orders only got.
How can you make
the one guy is it Tom Savini? I think that's his first name. He created this special Jason for the game, and it basically, he glows orange flames inside his mask, and he has a flaming pitchfork as his weapon.
Of course he does. It's Tom Savini.
But each Jason, for example, are different. They have different weapons, like the films. Some can run and some can't. Some are really slow. Some are really slow in water. Yeah. Some are faster in water. For example, Jason.
Tom Savini. Tom Savini, he played Love Machine in that film with the vampires by Robert Rodriguez.
Oh, From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah, he's mainly known for his effects, though, and his gore and stuff.
But I do really recommend the game. If you're just like your fun games, it's not a game you can really win, unless you're the counselors, because Jason always wins if he kills one person, technically. It's a fun game. And the thought that they're still working on it, and they're going to continue to work on it, is amazing. Definitely recommend it if you like your, if you like your slasher. If you like Fair Vada the 13th, I suppose, you'll love this. Just the most horrifying thing about it is if Jason turns out to be a 9-year-old, American, and starts swearing at you. But
can you make a Jason who is the kid from the Barbie advert?
All I have to say as well, you can use your mic on this game, but Jason can also hear you, because you can only talk to people in your close vicinity unless you find a walkie-talkie, and then you can talk to people with other walkie-talkies. But if where I learned this badly is, if you're running a walkie-talkie and someone else has got a walkie-talkie, what happens to that other walkie-talkie?
I never heard walkie-talkie said so much.
Yeah, but what happens when you speak in a walkie-talkie? What happens at the other end?
I don't know.
A sound.
Okay.
And Jason hears that sound. So when Jason is searching for you in a house or searching for someone else, don't do what I did and go, "Watch out, Jason's there." Because he'll find you. And he did.
Sounds fun.
Here's, and you can drive a car. You can actually drive the car.
What, Jason can?
No, you can drive the car out, so you could get in your car and do what someone else did, crash it into a wall, well, the last wall before the exit, and then get killed.
That so, seems like a bad strategy.
But your basic game is, for example, you need fuel for the car, you need the battery for the car, so and it randoms a placement, so you're never going to know where everything is. So it's a really good game.
Okay.
Excellent.
And I think that's us.
Yep.
All the games done.
Yes.
Yep, we are gamesed out.
At least for a little bit anyway.
Yeah.
We shall be back with more games, and perhaps some of them will be good next time. I know that's like pipe dream thinking there, but we can dream.
Yes, we can.
It's not in a well.
Yes, we can, because it's a magic realm between realities.
Well, we did actually have some good games today. We had Friday the 13th. We had Otoa Romano, Mask of Deception, which isn't a game, actually, now that I think about it. So we only had Friday the 13th as a game.
What was even the point then, Rob?
Technically, visual novels are classed as games. I don't know why.
Yeah, but did you have
okay,
to press
X? Okay, so next up, I'm going to be talking about this week's issue of Moon Knight.
No, that issue of Squirrel Girl was more appropriate, another one with all the flowcharts. That was more like the Choose Your Own Adventure one. That was a game.
Any excuse?
That's a reference everyone on this video game show is going to get.
Anything you can press X in, it should go on this show.
Yeah.
I really want to give Andy a t-shirt that has just an X on it and then start pressing it.
I think you might end up in prison
there,
Rob. I
don't know, weirdly sexual note.
You can't go around pressing other guys' X's without asking.
Andy, is it all right if I press your X?
Oh, God.
He still hasn't said no.
That's all you have time for on this edition of Press X. I think we're coming up to the time of the year where we'll be doing our E3 special pretty soon.
Yeah, we will. It's a couple of weeks, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's one to look forward to, where we'll talk about hundreds of games which you probably never get to play because it's too many games, as we've illustrated in this week's show. But yeah, we have been Press X, part of the Geek Show Podcast Network. You can find all of the shows under that banner: movie show, comic show, animation show, the Geek Show itself.
Not just a comic show, the best comic show.
Did you get an award?
I've had an award
for being just top notch.
Yeah, and me and Andrew have awards. We've won awards ourselves.
We have.
Yeah, I've won an award.
Yeah, we've won awards.
Exactly. We are all award-winning podcast hosts.
Yes. Just the awards we won weren't for podcasts.
Yes. Okay. I walked into that. But, yes, we are available on Audio Boom, and you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from, whatever app or service you might use. But if you do listen on iTunes, do give us a star rating and a review, because fundamentally it helps people see our show. It increases our visibility among the sea of other podcasts, and that is just generally a fantastic way to support us, and we just love you if you give us a little bit of love too. It's reciprocal. It's nice like that.
Yes.
Anyway, yeah. We have been none of this, you know, unrequited love. None of that. We'll have none of that. But yeah, we have been Press X. I have been Rob.
I've been Andy.
I've been Rob.
And I've been Andrew.
We'll see you all next time.
Thanks for listening.